Welcome to week 41 of our 4.5 year journey through all of God's inspired word. We are in the book of Deuteronomy, the fifth of Moses' five books. It is the 40th year of the Exodus, and Moses is making his final address to the Israeli people on the plains of Moab during the 11th month of that year. He will be dead and buried within a few more weeks, and Israel will be going into the Promised Land shortly thereafter. So his task, as he sees it, is to cram as much information into the hearts and the minds of those going into the Promised Land that he possibly can. As I've said before, he's like a teacher that knows that he won't be in the lives of his students any longer. And he just desperately wants to get them to understand what the most important thing for them to go forward with is. Now, as Moses addresses these Israelis, he lets a lot of his emotion be displayed. And I think we should appreciate that as we look at the book of Deuteronomy. And he is gravely concerned that his students are going to repeat the mistakes of the past, that they are going to get full of themselves once they get into the Promised Land and find all the wonderful things that are there waiting for them, and forget God, or actually involve themselves in the idolatry of the Canaanites. So this is a topic that comes up over and over again in his speech. Don't do that. Don't get self-satisfied. Do not participate with the Canaanites in their evil practices. In this section that we're going to start back up on again today, Deuteronomy chapter 9, we're going to start at verse 6. Moses has been telling them, don't get it in your head that you are so wonderful, and that is the reason why God is giving you this good land. The reality is, he is kicking out the very sinful peoples currently living there that have had more than five centuries to get their act together, and they have become worse sinners. And so that is why you are going to be acting as the sheriff to evict them, and then you will start living in the land. If you don't stick with God, if you instead engage in their activities, you will be evicted later, and somebody else will get your land for a while. So that is a very big theme that shoots through the book of Deuteronomy, and we should pay attention to it. So Deuteronomy chapter 9, verse 6, here is what Moses says to the Israelites. Know, therefore, that he who is your God is not giving you this good land to possess because of your righteousness, for you are a stubborn people. So he just tells them flat out, you guys have got issues. Now, the ones he's mostly addressing these remarks to are the oldest group, the people who are in their 50s, that were in their teens during the Exodus event, because they saw these things firsthand. Now, the next decade down, those guys that are in their 40s now, they would have been less than 10. Some of them definitely have no knowledge, no personal recollection of what happened during the Exodus. But some of those in their upper 40s might have a child's memory of the events. So these guys are in leadership now, but they had firsthand knowledge of the Exodus, and Moses says, you should know better. And yet some of you are way too self-centered, too stubborn to acknowledge that you should know better than engage in sinful behavior. So verse 7, remember and do not forget how you provoked he who is your God to wrath in the wilderness, From the day you came out of the land of Egypt until you came to this place, you have been rebellious against he who is. So again, that's targeted against the oldest teenagers, the ones that probably did have the same bad attitude that their parents and grandparents had that got them into trouble at the beginning of the Exodus experience. Verse 8, even at Horeb, which is just another name for Mount Sinai, you provoked he who is to wrath. And he who is was so angry with you that he was ready to destroy you. When I went up on the mountain to receive the tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant that he who is made with you, I remained on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. I neither ate bread nor drank water. Now that's new information. We know that Moses, after God gave the Ten Commandments verbally, went up onto Mount Sinai to get more information and to actually get the written down version of the Ten Commandments. And he spent 40 days and 40 nights there. But this is the first time we find out that he didn't eat anything during that time. And he didn't drink anything during that time. Now, the eating part, a person with a very strong physical constitution can get through 40 days without eating. They will be very weak at the end of it, and they will be probably quite scrawny because their body will have started using muscle mass to provide energy. But there's no human being that can get 40 days without water. It's impossible. 1 week at the absolute most, and you would die of terminal dehydration. So this is a supernatural thing that was happening with Moses during the 40-day period. Now, he gets back to reporting. This is his firsthand remembrance. Verse 10, he who is gave me the two tablets of stone written with the finger of God, and on them were all the words that he who is had spoken with you on the mountain out of the midst of the fire on the day of the assembly. And at the end of 40 days and 40 nights, he who is gave me the two tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant. And then he who is said to me, arise, go down quickly from here, for your people whom you have brought from Egypt have acted corruptly. They have turned aside quickly out of the way that I commanded them. They have made themselves a metal image. So this is the golden calf incident. And you might remember when we were studying this back in the book of Exodus, that it would appear that as the first day of the fifth month was approaching and Moses was not back yet, that the leadership of the Israelis got it in their heads that they needed to assume that Moses was never coming back, that he was missing in action, and that Aaron needed to now come to the forefront and get the people moving toward the promised land, and that they really would benefit from having a physical representation of he who is, the God who brought them out of Egypt. And apparently Aaron gave in to that insistence, and he made a golden calf, probably because that was the Egyptian understanding of what the Creator God presented himself on planet Earth as from time to time, the Apis bull. So I can almost imagine that they would have gone through the process of saying, well, we're not making a worship image of an idol of a pagan deity. We're just making something to give us a touch point, a faith point to relate us to the one who brought us out of Egypt. And when God saw that that was what was going on down at the bottom of the mountain, he dispatched Moses to go down and deal with that. Verse 13 of Deuteronomy 9. Furthermore, he who is said to me, I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stubborn people. Now, that's the phrase that Moses used against the people he's addressing just a few minutes earlier. That's where he's taking it from, is God's own words about these folks. Verse 14, "Let me alone that I may destroy them and blot out their name from under heaven, and I will make of you a nation mightier and greater than they." So God gives Moses the chance to act as intercessor. The responsibility of an intercessor is to represent God to the people, but also the people to God. So he gives Moses the chance to ditch these people and for God to start over with Moses' family. However, that would end up violating the promise of God that from the tribe of Judah in particular, there would be a promise kept. And so God was giving Moses also the chance to step forward and say, but that wouldn't be in accordance with your promises. So Moses is given the chance to speak out loud his faith in God's promises. And I honestly think that God had no intention of destroying the people at this time because of his promises. He knew that Moses needed to take ownership of his job as a mediator. All right, so Moses now says this, verse 15. "So I turned and I came down from the mountain, and the mountain was burning with fire, and the two tablets of the covenant were in my hands. And I looked, and behold, you had sinned against he who is your God. You had made yourselves a golden calf. You turned aside quickly from the way that he who is had commanded you." So I took hold of the two tablets, and I threw them out of my two hands and broke them before your eyes. And back at the time we were in Exodus, we talked about Moses was either demonstrating that they had broken the laws by breaking the physical tablets, or he did not feel they were worthy of having something written on by the finger of God, or possibly both, whenever he broke the tablets. Verse 18, "Then I lay prostrate before he who is as before 40 days and 40 nights. I neither ate bread nor drank water because of all the sin you had committed in doing what was evil in the sight of he who is to provoke him to anger." Now that takes out of any type of doubt what I talked about several weeks back now, that there was a second 40-day period. And Moses spent an awful lot of that period fasting and praying for the Israeli people. Verse 19, "For I was afraid of the anger and hot displeasure that he who is bore against you, so that he was ready to destroy you. But he who is listened to me that time also. So I stepped in on your behalf. I prayed for you. I spent 40 days and 40 nights again in God's presence and prayed that he would forgive you and lead you into the promised land. And he agreed that that's what he would do. Verse 20, "He who is was so angry with Aaron that he was ready to destroy him." Now, this is also new information. We knew that Aaron got in trouble with Moses, but now we find out that God could have and had considered with Moses the execution of Aaron for his part in the golden calf incident. But what does Moses report here in the Deuteronomy address after Aaron has now been gone since the beginning of this same 40th year? He says, "And I prayed for Aaron also at that time." And evidently, God forgave Aaron and gave him more time to be in leadership role as the high priest. Verse 21, "And then I took the sinful thing, the calf that you'd made, and burned it with fire and crushed it, grinding it very small till it was fine as dust. And I threw the dust of it into the brook that ran down from the mountain." So he renders the golden calf back down into gold dust, and then he sprinkles the gold dust on the headwaters of this miraculous stream that is coming from Mount Sinai. And this was symbolic of they needed to take accountability for their sin. They ate up the sinful thing that they had engaged in. So it's kind of part of the repentance process. At Taberah also, and at Massah, and at Kibroth Hataavah, you provoked he who is to wrath. And each of these places are named because of some confrontation, some moment of rebellion and stubbornness between the Israelis and the one who brought them out of Egypt. So they become memorial reminders of the stubbornness of this generation. Verse 23, and when he who has sent you from Kadesh Barnea, saying, go up and take possession of the land that I've given you, then you rebelled against the commandment of he who is your God and did not believe him or obey his voice. This is in that second year of the Exodus that he's referencing, when they were on the southern border. They sent out the 12 spies to check out the territory. The spies came back and they reported, it's beautiful, it's wonderful, it's exactly as has been described to us. But 10 of the spies then said, but it's full of people that are tough. There are even giants there, and they would eat us alive, so we can't take it. And even though Joshua and Caleb gave a good report and encouraged the people to trust God, the people as a whole didn't. And so that's when God gave the extra 40 years, well, the extra 38 and a half, so a total of 40 years of wilderness wanderings to the Israelis until that adult generation that had refused to go into the promised land at that time were gone. And so Moses is using this as another illustration that you guys have been pushing God since day one. Verse 24, you have been rebellious against he who is from the day that I knew you. Now, he jumps back to the second 40-day period now. Verse 25. Remember, this is a verbal address that is then written down. So it has the features of oral addresses, which includes sometimes you get ahead of the story and then you go back and you pick up at an earlier point. So that's exactly what Moses does. Verse 25. So I lay prostrate before he who is for these 40 days and 40 nights, because he who is had said he would destroy you. And I prayed to he who is, oh, my master, he who is, do not destroy this people and your heritage, whom you have redeemed through your greatness, whom you have brought out of Egypt with a mighty hand. Remember your servants, Abraham, Yitzhak, Jacob. So Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Do not regard the stubbornness of this people or their wickedness of their sin, lest the land from which you brought us say, well, it's because he who is was not able to bring them into the land that he promised them, and because he hated them, he has brought them out to put them to death in the wilderness. So this gets back to Moses' own argument with God. God, you have promises to keep, promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And besides, if the Egyptians find out that you just wiped out all these people in the wilderness, they'll say you were weak and incapable of following through with what you promised them. Verse 29, for they are your people and your heritage, whom you brought out by your great power and by your outstretched arm. So Moses says, God, you have to keep your promises and you have to uphold your reputation. Chapter 10. He continues his story. At that time, he who is said to me, cut for yourselves two tablets of stone like the first, come up to me on the mountain and make an ark of wood. Now, this is the Ark of the Covenant that's being referenced here. It will be made after Moses comes back from this second 40 days. But Moses kind of encapsulates the story of the second edition of the Ten Commandments and the making of the Ark of the Covenant as to kind of connected events, so that that's where these things are going to end up. Verse 2, I will write on the tablets the words that were on the first tablets that you broke, and you shall put them in the ark. So the Ten Commandments, probably displayed in front of the ark for a while, but eventually they will find their home inside the Ark of the Covenant, along with the golden pot of one day's ration of manna, and the power staff of Moses and Aaron, the staff that turned into a snake, the staff that was used to cross the Red Sea and to do the 10 plagues, the staff that bloomed and had ripe almonds on, that power staff will also be inside this Ark of the Covenant. Remember, the Ark of the Covenant is not a decorated storage box. It is the throne of God on earth. And so inside of it, some of those key components of God's reign are to be placed. His law, his provision of the manna, and his supernatural power demonstrated in the staff. Verse 3, so I did make an ark of acacia wood and cut two tablets of stone like the first, and went up on the mountain with the two tablets in my hand. And he wrote on the tablets in the same writing as before the Ten Commandments that he who is had spoken to you on the mountain of out of the midst of the fire on the day of the assembly, and he who is gave them to me. So the first set of Ten Commandments written on by God, second set of Ten Commandments written on by God. And sometimes there's confusion about that, but this is another one of the passages that helps clear that up. And one of these days, I believe we will see that physical second edition of the Ten Commandments, because the Ark of the Covenant disappeared out of history during the 600s BC. And the next time we see it in Scripture is in the book of Revelation. It's in heaven. And so I believe that's where the Ark of the Covenant and the three memorial things of the Exodus are located, and that Jesus will bring them back with him. That's my personal opinion. You can take it or leave it. You can love it or hate it. It's just an opinion, okay? Verse 5, Then I turned and came down from the mountain and put the tablets in the ark that I'd made, and there they are as he who is commanded me. So Moses gives his personal testimony. We've got the Ark of the Covenant with us right now, because this is the 40th year, remember, the tail end of the 40th year. So the Ark of the Covenant has existed since the end of the second year of the Exodus. And so the tablets are in it, the manna is in it, the staff may actually be in it as well. Now, verses 6 through 9 seem to be parenthetical, meaning it's not part of Moses' address, but rather some sort of inspired information that was put in by a prophet later. So it's a note about travel and things of that nature. The people of Israel journeyed from Beeroth Bene Yaakin to Moserah. There Aaron died, and there he was buried, and his son Eleazar ministered as priest in his place. Now, why is this coming up? Because it would be Eleazar who would be alive during this speech. From there, they journeyed to to Gudgoda, and from Gudgoda to Yabata, a land with brooks and of water. And at that time, He Who Is set aside the tribe of Levi to carry the Ark of the Covenant of He Who Is, to stand before He Who Is, to minister to Him, and to bless in His name to this day. Therefore, Levi has no portion or inheritance with his brothers. He Who is his inheritance, as He Who Is, your God, said to him. So a little editorial reminder that the reason the Levites carry the Ark of the Covenant and the other holy objects is because God is the one that decided that. And the reason that they have no regional Levitical territory is because God decided it to be like that. The reason they're scattered through the tribes in the Levitical cities is because God determined that's the way it needed to be. Verse number 10, we pick back up Moses' firsthand account. It says, I myself stayed on the mountain, as at the first time, 40 days and 40 nights. He Who Is listened to me that time also. He Who Is was unwilling to destroy you. So, because of my intervention, Moses says, God did not wipe you out, even though that would have been perfectly appropriate, given the sinfulness of the attitude that predominated in the community. Now, why is he bringing this all up? It is because he wants this generation that is going into the Promised Land not to repeat that sort of rebellion, or they will suffer. Verse 11, and He Who Is said to me, arise, go on your journey at the head of the people so that they may go in and possess the land that I swore to their fathers to give them. And so with that in mind, we're going to close up today. Tomorrow we'll pick up at Deuteronomy 10:12, where Moses now jumps ahead and says, this is what you need to do now that you're getting ready to go in the Promised Land, so that you won't end up coming under the judgment of God just like your parents and grandparents.